Excision number 11732, Reel 1.
Mr. Barlow, Reel 1.
Can you tell me what you were doing when war was declared in September 1939, please?
Oh, well, I was already married, and I was living in Dartford, Kent, as an engineering draftsman in a firm producing mechanical handling equipment, which is conveyors, which of course are used by every possible industry. The net result was, I used to always say that if I met someone who could find out what they were doing, I could usually say, well, I haven't been in your factory, but I've been in a factory doing exactly the same sort of stuff as you do, including going down coal mines.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
We thought it was coming, and I wasn't frankly surprised.
Were you dismayed?
No, I was already a member of the ARP organisation. I joined 6 months before the war. When the time war broke out, of course, all we had was an armband and a whistle.
Why did you decide to go in for ARP?
Well, I knew that I was in a reserved occupation because of the work I was doing, because conveyors were so useful. During the war, they were used for virtually everything. And I knew I wouldn't be called up, and I felt this was something I could do in my spare time, so to speak.
How did you get to know about it? Did you see an advertisement?
Can't remember. It's a long time ago.
How did you go about joining it?
Oh, I think I joined through the local council in Dartford, as far as I can remember.
Were you just accepted, or was there any difficulty?
No, I was accepted. And I did afterwards do a first aid course to become a little bit knowledgeable on first aid, which was useful later on during the war, particularly when one wing of our hospital was bombed and I was sent down there to do what I could. We had about 20 people killed in that particular bomb incident.
Can you say now exactly what an ARID warden was supposed to do?
Really, I would myself put it in the words that they were really in charge of looking after their particular section or road. I had 30 houses and I felt responsible for all the people in those 30 houses. And if I give you one particular incident to bear this out, I had one gentleman in one of those 30 houses that worked in a vicar's arms factory at Crayford, which was 2 or 3 miles down the road, and he worked permanently on a night shift. So he came to me as soon as the war started and he said, "Look, Mr. Barlow, my wife, as soon as the sirens go, she will go in a cupboard under the stairs with her 2 children, and she is frightened to death that if the house is bombed, no one will know that she is there. Will you come and shout through the letterbox when after the air raid sirens sound?" And right throughout the war, I never missed. And if I was away on business, I always arranged for one of my fire watchers, who were organised to do fire washing duties each night. I had a rota arranged for that. One of those would go and give her a shout through the letterbox. We did this all through the war. So I really felt I was in charge of the people in those 30 houses. And there was also the fact that the road I was on, Prince's Road, was a main route to London from Kent, and it was used at night during the war for getting vegetables up to Covent Garden Market in London. Now, I had arrangements made because I had traffic lights at one end of my road and a crossroads at the other end. I had arrangements made so that if this road of mine was bombed at all, there were diversions made by my fire watchers at each end to divert the traffic round. And these were the other things that we took care of. And, of course, when things like incendiary bombs dropped, well, then, of course, we all got busy. But I would say basically I felt that my job was to look after the people in those 30 houses.
What kind of training did you have for it, apart from this first aid training you mentioned?
Very, very little. In fact, I remember attending one session we had because our leader was a director of a building firm. In fact, he was a director of the building firm that had built the 15 pairs of semi-detached houses in which I lived in one, and he lived in the N1. Unfortunately, a very sad thing happened at the end of the war. At the end of the war, he went out in a lovely garden with no problems at all other than the stress of the war and shot himself in his own garden. And I got back home one night to find that he'd done this. Now, he used to carry out exercises, and I remember once being asked to be a fire engine, which I refused point blank to do. We were trying to do a demonstration. I said, I'll be anything else, but I don't think I want to be a fire engine. But otherwise, the training was it was really more common sense than anything else.
Now, presumably, in the period of the Phoney War, as it came to be called, in the first several months of the war, when it was relatively quiet at home, you had very little to do.
Yes. Well, we all rushed out, of course, as soon as the first sirens went, when the war started, everyone, I think, in London rushed out, for some unknown reason, expecting German bombers to come straight overhead. Well, of course, nothing happened. We just stood there and waited for about half an hour, and then the all clear went. And then, of course, it was months and months after that before anything really happened. And I just continued on then with my normal work. I mean, in any case, I could only do this, the ARP work, after work, you see, because my company was in Erith, right by the side of the river. Dartford is near the river, but not on the river. Erith, where I worked, was on the river, about 3 or 4 miles away, and I used to cycle. And of course, once the things like doodlebugs arrived, they were often going overhead when I was cycling one way or the other.
When did it all start? Can you describe how it all started in Dartford, the Blitz?
I can only say that what happened was really planes started to attack London, and of course, to get to London, they invariably came into the Dartford area and started coming over Dartford, and we started finding the anti-aircraft guns firing. We had one group of 4.5mm anti-aircraft guns on Dartford Heath, and then there was another squad of similar guns at Bexley Heath, which was about 3 or 4 miles away. And they started firing, and we started getting raids. I mean, it just happened, you know.
Can you describe any incidents that you had to handle in your street during the actual blitz itself on Dartford?
Oh, incidents by the glory, as I say. The doodlebugs, the most interesting one was probably the first doodlebug to come over Dartford, which I saw in an early summer's evening. We had always been told if we saw anything unusual to report it to our underground headquarters in Dartford itself. Well, I was stood outside in my porch, because if there was shrapnel falling, shrapnel was a nuisance even with your tin hat on, so I invariably stayed inside the porch and only went out on patrol if I had some reason for doing it. Right at the beginning, of course, we went on patrol quite a lot. And the first bomb that I ever heard, I was on patrol with a colleague in Prince's Road near my house, early hours of the morning, and we heard this bomb definitely falling, and we did exactly as we'd been told to do. We fell flat on our face on the pavement, and we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And then in the far distance, was the faintest little plop. And we learned later on that that bomb had dropped somewhere near Chatham, where Chatham Dockyard was. But of course, in the quiet of the night, you can hear sounds a lot further away. Well, I full well remember the colleague that I had with me was the chief draftsman of my engineering company, who lived round the corner from me. And I stood up, dusted myself down, and I said, "That's the last time I'm doing that." Well, I managed this and heard an awful lot of bombs falling a lot nearer than that later on. But I gave way on one occasion because a string of bombs was dropped, and fairly early on, they were about 500, they were about 50 or 100, quite small bombs, and they usually dropped about 12 in a string, one after the other. Four or five of these, we were in the lounge, the sirens hadn't gone, we were in the lounge, Mrs. Barlow and I, and we heard these bombs dropping, each one getting nearer, and when we got to about the fifth one, we dived underneath a bed that we had in the lounge at that time, and then suddenly realised that while we'd got our heads and shoulders under the bed, our legs and our bottoms were still sticking out, by which time the bombs were starting to drop further away, and I remember we got out from under the bed and had a jolly good laugh at how stupid we'd been. On the other hand, if that string of bombs, when I discovered where they were the next day, had been two or three, couple of hundred yards to the left, I shouldn't be sitting here saying this now, but I, as I say, I did give way on this one occasion to taking evasive action for bombs. The only other time I did it was because of home guard activities. But the other thing was about the doodlebug was I saw this thing coming over in this sunlit evening, summer's evening, and got straight on the phone, as we'd been told to, and the conversation went something like this: "I've just seen a very unusual thing in the sky," and that was repeated at the other end. "It's like a plane with the wings cut off to one third the length," and that was repeated. I said, "It's got a sheet of flame from its tail," and that was slowly repeated. And I said, "It's vibrated my front door as it went over." And I am quite sure, and I've always been sure to this day, that the chap at the other end, by the time I'd finished, was convinced that I had been drinking all day. But of course, he was in an underground shelter and I was up above and I'd watched this for a doodlebug go over. And of course, then during the evening, they continued going over. Sometimes you could see the lights or the flames for two or three at the same time. And we had what we called, there were three routes near Dartford. There was the one I nicknamed to Mrs. Barlow the South Route. That went across Bexley Heath and further towards London. It didn't come over Dartford. The North Route went the other side of us and into Essex. And the third route I called our route because that brought them straight over Dartford itself. Well, we watched these things all evening. We'd never seen anything like it before. We didn't know what they were. Mrs. Barlow stayed up until about 1 o'clock, and at about 1 o'clock she said, "It's no good, I'm going to go to bed." And off she went to bed. I stayed up, and at about 4 or 5 o'clock, our Heath guns, not knowing what they were, they'd been firing at any that were anywhere near us, winged one and brought it down, and I knew it was falling on a bungalow right at the traffic lights in Prince's Road at the end of my 30 houses, but on the other side of the road, where it was a territory where that I knew had no RA warden. So I dashed straight indoors and grabbed my first aid kit and rushed off. I didn't know until I got back about an hour later that I had stood on my front door to grab my first aid kit because the explosion had take my front door off. I rushed down to the corner, was soon joined by the fellows from our sector post, which wasn't in my road. Our sector post was round the corner in another road in Lowfield Street, nearer to Dartford. And they all worked from that sector post. But because my road was important, because of it being on the main road to London, I was allowed to use my own house and simply go round when I wanted to. So every night, I always left my cycle outside at night so that I could tear around there on my cycle if I wanted to. Otherwise, I used my own house as base. They joined me. We dealt with the fire because the bungalow had collapsed and the red-hot metal from the doodle bug had caught the rafters on fire. We put that out. We dealt with the one casualty because the fellow had sent his wife and child away from Dartford at that time. We dealt with the casualty and eventually I ambled back to my own house to find Mrs. Barlow outside. When the bomb had gone off, the glass of the front bedroom windows had fallen right up to the side of her bed, but none had come on the bed. And she dressed and got outside and was talking to our next door neighbours. I joined in the conversation and eventually said, weren't we lucky? And so Mrs. Barrow said, well, you know the front door's off. And I said, no. She said, you know the back door's off and the French windows are wide open. I said, no. She said, you know all the blackout and all the windows are gone. I said, no. And realised that we had been slightly involved. Well, that was the first experience of doodlebugs, but after that I must have seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And you got to the point where you say if you were out walking or cycling, you just simply watched them as they came towards you, and providing the engine was still ticking when they got straight overhead, you didn't bother with them anymore. If the engine cut out before they got to you, then you watched them very carefully to see where they were going to fall, because invariably they fell down at an angle and you had to watch in which direction they were going to fall.
Did the great majority of them go over towards London, or did a lot of them
fall? Oh, we had a lot round us, you see, because right at the beginning, there was the Anderson shelter, the corrugated iron one on the surface, which you could get hold of. But my next-door neighbour and I both did an underground dugout in our own garden. We dug out an underground dugout and put corrugated iron over the top and about 4 or 5 feet of earth on top of that with steps down into it. And I used that for quite a long time. And what was the point you were making?
Did most of them go over towards London, or did they fall on Dartford?
Oh, no. The reason I was making that was because then later on, when Mrs. Barlow decided she was not staying in my underground shelter any longer, no matter what happened, because she felt it was damp and what have you, and she decided to go indoors, I designed myself an alternative to the other shelter, the Anderson shelter. Now, the Anderson shelter was a square one meant to go indoors with space for a bed. Well, I'd taken a look at that, and as an engineer, I was dubious as to whether it would stand a complete house falling on top of it. So I designed one very much like it, but in the main, most of the members were a little bit stronger than the one in the official Anderson shelter. I had that made at my firm in Erith and erected it myself in the front room. And on top of that, I had a large map of Dartford District, or a map about 2 or 3 feet by 2 feet. And I started off trying to plot every bomb with a red circle, every doodle bug with a red cross, and every rocket with an asterisk. But I got so many on top of one another, I just had to give the whole thing up, because they were everywhere. You know, an awful lot fell in around Dartford itself. Not so many rockets. The rockets tended to go further. The rockets tended to be mostly in London and the home counties, even beyond London. But we just had the one occasion with the rocket, which was because people have asked me if I was ever really scared. And the one thing that really scared me was the rocket that came down, because it fell not too far from us. The net result was, although the rockets went up about 60 miles in the air, when they were coming down at an angle, and they were overhead until they got down to the ground in front of you, and the net result was we heard this noise which got louder and louder. It was absolutely a terrific noise, and it did really scare us.
What kind of a noise?
Well, it was just a loud sound, like a almost like the noise of a plane getting nearer and nearer to you, but a frightening noise, if you see what I mean. I was scared, and that was about the only time I wasn't scared with the bombs, but I was scared with that.
Do you remember which street it hit?
No, fortunately for us, I went out searching for it because it was the first one to fall in our area, and we got a note up from our Dartford headquarters to try and find pieces of it, which we if we could. And my same colleague, my chief draftsman of my firm, and I went out to search for this in the dark, but it had dropped in a disused gravel pit. There were an awful lot of disused gravel pits all around Dartford, and it had fallen in one of those about half a mile from my house.
Do you remember which area the disused gravel pit was in?
No, I can't.
Do you remember?
I only know it was nearer to Dartford than nearer to the London. It was a little way on the road to Bexleyheath from my house.
Do you remember any of the streets or buildings in Dartford which were particularly badly hit?
No, I was too concerned. Once things started, I was too concerned with what happened in our particular area and what was happening in our area than I was, you know, in the rest of the town. The only one that I do remember, of course, was the hospital in the going down the hill to the centre of the town, which was bombed and had lost the wing, and a call was put out from our underground headquarters for every air raid warden who'd done a first aid course to go to the hospital. And, of course, having done a first aid course, I was one that went to that hospital. I know it's a hospital which, at the moment, they are just talking of closing now.
Was that hit by a bomb or a V1?
That was a bomb.
So was that early on in the war?
No, I would say that was before. You see, towards the end, our defences, after we got barrage balloons, you see, barrage balloons were put up right across Kent and quite close to Dartford, because I once counted over a hundred balloons. I counted with the naked eye from my house, but they continued on out of sight. We both had the barrage balloons, and because we were near the river, you see, the planes, particularly on moonlight nights, the planes would use the River Thames to come over Dartford to get to London, and we ended up with what we called stink bombs. Rows of these things were put all along the pavement outside my road and in other roads in Dartford. They were like big oil drums, and they were filled with used engine oil and lit up at night simply to make smoke to it in the endeavour, and they were lit up according to which way the wind was blowing that particular night to blot out the River Thames.
So it was a kind of smoke screen?
It was a smoke screen, yeah.
Do you think they were effective?
I don't know. I don't think they were very effective any more than I ever thought the anti-aircraft guns were effective, you see, because I watched From outside my house, I watched thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds fired. Probably hundreds of thousands of rounds fired. And the only thing that I ever saw hit was the doodlebug that ended at the end of my road. Because there was another occasion, you see, when a single plane came over. And I stood in my porch and I watched this plane go right across Kent, picked up in three or four searchlights, because by then we'd also got searchlights, which we hadn't got to start with. And three or four searchlights picked this up and they kept it. It got out of range of one, another searchlight picked it up and they kept it in their beam right across for about 4 or 5 minutes. And you wouldn't have thought it could have been missed, but it still carried on until eventually I could see it disappearing towards London. It got out of the searchlights. Of course, then I couldn't see it anymore. Now, next morning, when I got to my office at Erith, my managing director got hold of me. We were a fairly small firm. We only employed just over 100. But we did all the conveyors for the post office, almost exclusively for the post office. And we had fully equipped Mount Pleasant, which is the largest sorting office in Europe. I got into the office and he called me in and he said, Jack, he said, Mount Pleasant's been bombed. And he said, we've got, you and I have got to go up and see what we can do. They've taken over Olympia, an agricultural hall Islington to use for sorting. And we've got to see if there any of our conveyors are good enough to be moved and refitted over there. And as we went up in the morning, they only found the body of one of the telephonists in the afternoon, I remember. Now, in my paper that morning before I went into the office, I'd read a note which I'd read what I remember very clearly. A single plane passed over London last night and there was slight damage to a provincial post office. Now, that was what appeared in the paper. But when I got to the office, I discovered that Mount Pleasant had been nearly gutted. I realised afterwards how well our protective measures were over not telling the Germans what had really happened.
So that's Mount Pleasant in the Holborn area?
Oh, yes. Which I was in an awful lot. I've been down in the underground railway, because that's one of the post offices was served by the underground railway. Of course, they got an underground railway there.
So you were called to go to Mount Pleasant to do this engineering work?
I went with my managing director to see what we could do, whether there was any of our stuff that could be moved again, you see.
What did it look like?
A hell of a mess. It was millions of pounds worth of damage. I was absolutely appalled. I was absolutely appalled, particularly in view of what I'd read just before I left home in my morning paper.
When the V1s came over, did you think that this weapon might win the war for the Germans?
I don't think I looked at it then. It's nice for us to think of it in this way now, in retrospect, but at that time I was more concerned with what it was and what we could do about it. I didn't really think of it as something that might win or lose the war. I was thinking of it from the practical point of view, more of something else different that had to be dealt with, if you see what I mean. And that thought didn't occur to me, no.